Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, the Worldwide Order of Oblate Missionaries elects a new Superior General. The President of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, Archbishop Claudio Celi, talks about the recent World Congress of Catholic Press in Burkina Faso. And we have a reflection on the Angel Gabriel, patron saint of communication workers, whose feast day was marked in a special way at Vatican Radio on Wednesday. Called to conversion in the service of the poor. That's the theme under discussion this month by Oblate missionaries from all over the world gathered here in Rome for their 35th General Chapter. This week, the 89 delegates of the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate, to give the congregation its full title, elected a new Superior General. He's US native Father Louis Logan. He was chosen on Tuesday to succeed German Father Wilhelm Steckling. During his six-year term, Father Louis will lead the congregation of over 4,000 Oblate missionaries working in countries right across the globe. Well, I caught up with Father Logan just after his election to find out more about the order and about his personal experience of working with the poorest communities, both in the US and Brazil, where he lived and ministered for many years. Now, tell us first of all, if you can, your reactions. It's a huge job that you're taking on. What was your first reactions to the news?
It's overwhelming. You know, I'm not worthy, and I think we're at a moment, you know, of change, a lot of changes in the church and in the congregation. So it's a big responsibility. But in the end of the day, I think of our faith and the grace of state. We always say, you know, God will give us the grace to do what we need to do. So I believe in that, and it gave me a lot of peace. But it was an emotional experience. It brought tears to my eyes. And to be recognized like this by so many of my brothers is a great responsibility and a great act of love, I believe. So it's overwhelming.
You're meeting here in your general chapter, focusing on the theme of conversion, mm-hmm. aren't you? New heart, new spirit, new mission. Tell us a little bit about that, what it means.
Okay, it's quite a theme. It came up 3 years ago. We had an interchapter in South Africa where the provincials gathered, and we were talking about the challenges we face throughout the world as oblates. And, you know, every region has its own challenges, and we said, well, what is underneath this? What's the common thread? And little by little, it came out that really we're being called to reconnect with the gospel, reconnect to the mission that the church gives us, and that we heard the call to conversion. So if we could both as individuals and as communities hear the good news and let it shape our lives, our mission would be done with greater zeal, with greater enthusiasm, with greater effectiveness for God's kingdom. So I see the theme of conversion is very strongly connected to our mission as Oblates of Mary Immaculate.
Tell us a little bit about the order. It's a relatively new congregation, isn't it? Tell us
right.
a little bit about the history, first of all.
Okay, well, Eugene de Maisonneuve was a Provençal, a nobleman during the French Revolution. He went to Italy for exile. He came back to France and found a different country and found the church had been pretty much emptied out. And he was in a crisis. He was a young man when he returned to France, looking for meaning in his life. And on a Good Friday, 1807, before the crucifix, he had an overwhelming experience of God's unconditional love, and that gave him direction and a focus, and he began to gather the youth, he began to visit prisons, and eventually he said, I want to be a priest and servant of the poor. So he began preaching missions. He was ordained, went to Saint Sulpice in Paris, became a priest, and then started doing missions in rural France, preaching the gospel to the poor. So in 1816, he got together a group of priests to found the Missionaries of Provence. And 10 years later, in 1826, the Pope approved us as a congregation in the church. So we are pretty young. We're teenagers.
Tell us a little bit about the organization today. You're present in over 60 countries, aren't you, worldwide?
Right. We're about 4,200 oblates in 67 countries, the five continents, and I have to get my figures straight, you know, but I think we're about 45 provinces, which are the bigger groupings of oblates throughout the world, and then we have delegations and missions everywhere. And, you know, one of our big challenges is the demographic changes. In Europe and North America, we're diminishing, we're older. We had a wonderful, glorious past. And in Latin America, Africa, and Asia, we're younger and we're growing. So that is shaping the face of the congregation right now.
So it's fair to say that the emphasis, perhaps, of your work is now focused on those continents, Africa, Latin America, Asia.
Right, that's where the youth are. But even as that is an emphasis, we're also in Europe and North America trying to understand how the gospel can be preached, how we can evangelize secularized areas of the. So we're still vital, but smaller.
A huge challenge, isn't it? Particularly in this secular context.
It really is. I think the Pope's visit to England recently is an example before it, how much controversy and even rejection. But when they met the Pope, there was quite an openness there. So what we feel is people are hungering for the spiritual. They get kind of what we just say, they reject the church or institutions looking for the spiritual. And I think somehow we have to connect the beauty, the grace, the wonder of our church with what people are looking for. Connect those two. And I really think a fire will reignite the faith in those countries.
You have oblates working in many different areas, don't you? What would you say is the particular charism, though? What do people particularly look to your congregation for?
We're close to the poor. Wherever you go, I was provincial in the States up till today, and it was so wonderful and a privilege to go around the country, and I would meet the people and the people's love for the oblates. So we preach the gospel to the poor, and there is a special relationship, a special closeness we have that marks the oblates. That's really an essential mark of our charism.
You talked about your work in Brazil in a past life. Tell us a little bit about your experiences there, working again, I imagine, with the poorest communities.
Right. I would say, you know, it was a graced 18 years. I learned to be a priest in Brazil. I went as a deacon. I was ordained and then stayed until the end of 1996. And a marvelous people of deep faith, very poor. I worked in the favelas and I worked with formation of young men throughout those years. I learned, and I think that's part of our charism, we go to preach the gospel to the poor, but the poor also teach us and evangelize us. And I learned the joy of simplicity. I learned the generosity when people have nothing, how they will share. I saw their forgiveness, powerful, deep forgiveness, tremendous vitality against, you know, tremendous odds against them. So, as I say, it was a wonderful 18 years that taught me, I say, more than I taught them. I think I received from the people, and I love them dearly. And if I'm a priest today, it's because of what the Brazilian people taught me.
In Brazil, like in many of those countries throughout Latin America, of course, the Catholic Church is facing a drop in numbers, mainly, of course, because of the advance of the Protestant sects that are claiming so many converts to their churches. How did you relate to that during your time?
Well, I saw it. It was beginning when I was there. You know, it's hard to put a finger on it, but I'd say, you know, the custom in Brazil and a lot of Latin America is to baptize. That's driven into the people, the church, the first missionaries. You have to baptize. I don't think in a lot of instances the church had the capacity to catechize. And so when another religion comes along, people could be convinced, you know, and follow it because their roots in Catholicism are not that deep. They've been baptized. But they have not been catechized. So, and the sheer number of people was always the challenge. How do you evangelize so many people? And I know now they are having more vocations in Brazil, so I'm happy to hear that. But I'd say that was the gap there to evangelize all the people who have been baptized. There was kind of a gap there that we have to work on.
You're also working in, for example, Africa or indeed in Asia, in countries where Christianity is a small minority. Again, I imagine interfaith must be an integral part of your training, your work as oblates.
Right, and it's a big question here at our chapter, where we're often the minority, like in Asia. And the greater, the older religions might not even consider us important. How do you begin a dialogue? They say, well, who are you to ask for a dialogue? So we're talking about that, our presence in the midst of Asia's countries like India or China. How do we relate to others? In Africa, I go there once a year because our province in the States has a mission. You see the gospel being embraced by great numbers with enormous vitality and joy. It's really a different situation. But again, respectfully, we're seeking to dialogue with the people who have their native religions, those who might be of other Christian traditions, or a Muslim or Hindu faiths, you know. So we're trying to prepare our missionaries with a respectful dialogue in those countries also.
Finally, a personal question. Perhaps what do you see as the biggest challenges for you in the years ahead now?
The biggest challenge, I guess, will be in this varied reality. We're in 67 countries, everybody facing different changes, different challenges. How do we remain united and a deep communion of oblate life with one another? I mean, that is what is on my mind right now. You know, how you animate a whole congregation respecting the different realities everywhere. So we want structures that are collaborative and fraternal, participative. We've talked a lot about that these days. So how to have those good structures that communicate life and animate zeal for all of us and keep us united and close to the poor always.
Thanks there to Father Lewis Logan, the new Superior General of the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate. The 22nd World Congress of the International Catholic Union of the Press, or UKIP as it's known, took place earlier this September in Ouagadougou, the capital of Burkina Faso, the first time that this Congress has been held on African soil since its inception 83 years ago. Over 300 participants from 48 countries were represented from all five continents, and the meeting was officially opened by the president of Burkina Faso, Blaise Compaoré. The main theme of the conference was media at the service of justice, peace and good governance in a world plagued by inequalities and poverty. Participants focused their discussions on a wide range of issues such as professionalism and culture of peace, interreligious conflicts and the challenges of peacemaking, the particular context of ethno-religious conflicts in Nigeria, the role of media in promoting democracy and Christian ethics and morality. The conference, which concluded on September the 19th, was preceded by a gathering of young journalists focused on training up young men and women to bring creative new ideas to this growing area of professional life in countries right across the continent.
I found people very much engaged in their activities. They want to play a major role in society. And this is positive.
As head of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, Archbishop Claudio Celi attended the conference in Burkina Faso. On his return, he talked to my colleague Lydia O'Kane about his impressions and about his hopes for the future of Catholic communications in Africa as a whole.
I think that the first point to be considered is that such a congress has taken place in Africa. It's the first time that the World Congress of the Catholic Press is taking place in Africa. And this is very significant. And I think that is telling us of the needs to increase such a presence and to promote such a presence in Africa. As you know, just less than 1 month ago in Nairobi, there was a special meeting of some small press agencies belonging to religious congregations. And they decided to have a new Catholic press agency from Africa. Because, as you know, until now, whatever is happening in Africa is known in the global context of the world today through European or American press agencies. Now, many things can be read, can be interpreted through an African eye. And I think that in the dialogical context of the world today, we need also to know what the African people is thinking about the African development. As you know, this was a world congress. It means that we were having people coming from 48 countries. For sure, the majority of the people attending the Congress were from Africa. But we were having people from Asia, from Europe, from Latin America. And everybody was expressing the future needs of the church in the communication world. And I think that the Congress was positive. Many problems were touched by the different lecturers. I remember an intervention of a Venezuelan professor of university, or the very important intervention of the Senegal woman talking about the role of women in communication today in Africa and in the African development. Appropriate, I would say, interventions. They were touching problems. As you know, the theme of the Congress was the Catholic press in a tension of reconciliation and peace in Africa. And so, as you can imagine, we were touching such problems that have a big reference to the majority of the countries in Africa. It's not only a problem of reconciliation and peace, but also of social inequalities and poverty. And so I think that also myself, I was making an intervention in this field because I consider that really the Catholic press or the church through its own media can play a very significant role in the promotion of reconciliation and peace in many countries in Africa. And especially, as you can imagine, to overcome some social inequalities and poverty. And so I'm coming from Ouagadougou with a certain hope, and I would say also a certain satisfaction. As you know, the president of the Republic of Burkina Faso was present at the opening session of the Congress, but also all the Episcopal Conference of Burkina Faso was present. I think that such a Congress is a very big effort on the side of the government, but also on the side of the church. And I think that we must have a strong, a fervent hope that such a Congress, little by little, will produce the desired effects or results. Certainly, it will take time. Because, as you can imagine, Africa is facing many problems also in the field of communication. As you know, new technologies are certainly increasing their importance in Africa, but we have to promote and to increase such a presence and such reference to new technologies. We need time. But I think that this is a first very positive step. And I am accustomed to say, according to a traditional refrain in my country, that who is well beginning is already at halfway in his journey. And I think that we must be happy about this.
What did you feel came out of the Congress about future challenges regarding Catholic media, especially regarding religious tolerance or reporting on conflicts, for example?
Many of these problems were touched by people having interventions in the Congress. As you know, we must proceed in this way. This is why I am pleased that such a Congress has taken place in Africa. Because I think that the African people and also the various governments must take notice of the importance of the new technologies in promoting peace and reconciliation. It will be not an easy task. As you know, difficulties are increasing sometimes. But I think that people now, they have a different perception. And I realized that people present in the Congress were facing certainly the difficulties of the local situations, but they were eager, they were trying to do something to promote. It will take time. But I think that we are on the right way. We need now to support, we need now to promote. We must encourage such initiatives because little by little, African people and the African church will find its own way to promote and to reach some positive steps in such a way.
When you were talking about the African church, and it's a growing church when you see vocations, so it's interesting that it was held there also. It's fitting that it was held there when you think about Africans really do listen to Catholic radio. It is a growth area.
As you know, we have difficulties also for Catholic radios. As you know, in this moment, the Catholic radios operating in Africa are less than 200, and we need many more radios. Because certainly the Catholic radio is playing an important role, not only in evangelization, but also in human promotion. I was talking with many people operating radios in Africa. People are listening at our Catholic radios. People are perceiving the importance of the message that the Church is giving through its media. The problem is that we have difficulties, not in Burkina Faso, because in Burkina Faso, every diocese has its own radio. But in many other countries, this is not possible for many reasons. And so really, the church is finding some difficulties in promoting a new culture of respect, of dialogue, and of promotion of peace. We must work with the medias that we have. But this is why I am full of hope. I tell you honestly, I don't have illusions. I think that we have hopes because I found people very much engaged in their activities. They want to play a major role in society. And this is positive. I think that, as I was telling you, the African church and the African people will find their own way to promote these values. But also, this is interesting, are traditional values. In the tradition, the African tradition. And so I think that we must cooperate in this field together.
Thanks there to Archbishop Claudio Celi, President of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. He was talking to my colleague Lydia O'Kane about the recent World Congress of the International Catholic Union of the Press in Burkina Faso. And now Linda Bordoni is here with a reflection on a special celebration for all communication workers.
September the 29th is a special day for us here at Vatican Radio. It's the day we celebrate our patron saint, the Archangel Gabriel. A special mass is held in the morning for all radio employees, followed by a party during which honorary recognitions for good service are awarded. A brief consultation of the Catholic Dictionary revealed to me that the name Gabriel means man of God, or God has shown himself mighty, and it first appears in the prophecies of Daniel in the Old Testament. In fact, it was the angel Gabriel who announced to Daniel the prophecy of the 70 weeks. He was also the angel who appeared to Zechariah to announce the birth of St. John the Baptist. Finally, it was he who announced to Mary that she would bear a son who would be conceived of the Holy Spirit, Son of God and Saviour of the world. Thus, St. Gabriel is the patron of communications workers. Someone I'm sure who can tell me more about Gabriel is Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright. I happen to know that he is currently in Rome, preparing for yet another of his travels. But as always, Father Timothy found time for me. And as it turned out, he's so interested in angels that this is only the first in a series of reflections inspired by the Archangel Gabriel.
The 29th of September is the feast in the Church of St. Michael and all the angels. And on this, the feast day also of the patron saint of the Vatican Radio, St. Gabriel particularly, Fortitudo Dei, the strength of God, or in other traditions translated as the trustworthy spirit, or again the spirit of inspiration, or the angel of the power of God, the patron saint of communications. Perhaps the place where I found most evidence of St. Gabriel in art was in a brochure which I picked up at the Coptic Museum in Cairo, in Egypt. And there's a wonderful picture in that of a double-sided panel. On the one side is a representation, an iconographic representation of the Last Supper. Jesus clearly presiding at a meal, the apostles around him, and Jesus' eyes fixed on the one who will betray him out of the corner of his eye. But on the other side is the picture of St. Gabriel, the angel of strength, with a scroll in one hand, a cross in the other, and his eyes fixed to the right. The man of power, the man with a message. And the message is that truth is always having to face error, falsehood, distortion. And within the world in which we live, to discern between right and wrong, good and bad, is one of the gifts that each of us seeks to acquire. And it's a gift that comes through our own faith and our own certainty derived from that faith, and also our uncertainties and questions, which crush in upon us from outside by people asking us questions, presenting impossible situations, putting us in a position where to say, no, I disagree, sounds like being insensitive and inhuman. So St. Gabriel, the one who can tell the truth in the face of error, the one who can give strength to those struggling with the questions, is indeed a fitting patron saint for today.
That was Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright.
And that's all from us here at the English programme for today. You're listening to Vatican Radio, Laudato Jesus Christus. Mm-hmm.